I'm Jason Wright, and this is the Texas Titans Podcast. Just like the name of the podcast suggests, I will be visiting with Texas Titans of business, academia, sports, or whatever their chosen field, looking for the disciplines and habits that have made these Texans so remarkable. Success leaves clues, and I want to crack the code to these Titans' success and share it with you. Thank you for joining me here on the Texas Titans Podcast. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Texas Titans Podcast. Today I had the opportunity to sit down with S.M. Wright II. But before I get into who S.M. Wright II is, I want to tell you about who the first S.M. Wright was, which was his father, S.M. Wright Sr. S.M. Wright was a towering figure in Dallas, Texas during the Civil Rights Movement. He is credited for keeping peace and calm in an otherwise very, very tense and tumultuous time. And I want to read you the bio on S.M. Wright real quick so you'll get an idea of who he is and then understand S.M. Wright II, the legacy that he continues today. S.M. Wright was born in Dallas on February 7, 1927, to the Reverend Calvin and Mary Wright. He grew up in one of the poorest neighborhoods in Dallas, the Bon Ton community. As a child, he was determined to be somebody. So he focused on his education, graduating from Lincoln High School and earning a bachelor's degree from Bishop College in Marshall, Texas. He later earned a master's and doctorate degree from Bishop College as well. Dr. Wright became the pastor of the People's Missionary Baptist Church in South Dallas in 1957. A natural leader, he served as advisor to elected officials, businessmen, and civic leaders. He was known for his ability to unite ethnic groups peacefully. During the turbulent 1960s, Dr. Wright worked with city leaders to foster integration in education, employment, and political representation, as well as in restaurants, hotels, shops, and swimming pools. He died on November 3, 1994. To honor his legacy, then-Governor George W. Bush changed the name of Highway 175 to the S.M. Wright Freeway in 1995. So now, those of you who have driven through the Metroplex over near the fairgrounds in that area, whenever you drive along S.M. Wright Freeway, you're going to learn a little bit more about who he is or who he was and who his son is and the legacy that still continues today. Now, let's talk about his son, S.M. Wright II. S.M. Wright II is one of the most dear people you will ever meet in your life. He has done such a remarkable job continuing his father's legacy and ministry. And through this conversation, we talk about what it was like at the age of 18, assuming such a prominent ministry and organization such as the one that he took over and was now faced with leading. We talk about the critics that he had to face, and we talk about how it was a time. There was a time where the ministry almost went bankrupt, with some 2,000 members leaving, and it was at that time that he and his brother Calvin, who was only 17 at the time, had to figure out what they were going to do to keep their father's ministry alive. And so what they did is they started outreach programs. They reached out to some of the truly Dallas Titans of the time that we'll talk about in the interview, who came along beside S.M. Wright and has created a ministry that's not only about preaching the gospel, but also is about community outreach. The Beds for Kids program that the S.M. Wright Foundation supports is truly outstanding. Whenever S.M. was going through and helping these children or helping families in these communities, he was going to some homes, and as he'll mention in the interview, he noticed these children had nowhere to sleep. They didn't have beds, and this was something that he admits he just took for granted, that every kid has a bed, right? Well, they don't. And so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the Christmas in the Park, which the S.M. Wright Foundation not only supports but founded over at Fair Park. During the Christmas season, they fill the entire Fair Park auditorium with people, and they're donating toys and families coming in to have a Christmas that they just may not otherwise be able to have but for the S.M. Wright Foundation. But I really think you'll get a sense of not only what an incredible leader S.M. Wright II is, but also the care with which he took this incredible legacy that his father bestowed upon him and continues to grow today. So I hope you enjoy this interview with my friend and definitely a Texas Titan for sure, S.M. Wright II. Thank you. This episode is brought to you by Office Pride. If you have a commercial business, a commercial office, physician's office, insurance office, real estate office, I don't care what kind of office you have, it gets dirty throughout the course of business. And guess what? If you're a physician, you need to be taking care of your patients. If you're an insurance agent, you need to be writing insurance policies. If you're a real estate agent or a real estate broker, you need to be selling houses or selling or writing leases or doing anything other than cleaning your office space. That's why you need Office Pride. My friend David Stein is the East Texas developer for Office Pride, and he is also one of the top franchisees in the entire Office Pride family of franchises. And he's right here in East Texas, and I cannot more highly recommend both David as a leader and Office Pride, the company that he runs right here in East Texas. Give them a call at 903-534-0425, 903-534-0425, or just go to officepride.com. If you're outside the East Texas area, there's probably an Office Pride near you. Check them out. And when you do so, please, please, please mention that you heard about them on the Texas Titans podcast. David is David Stein, our local East Texas developer. Not only is a good friend, but he is a Texas Titan, a great entrepreneur, a great friend. And I can tell you, he runs his business with the utmost of integrity. They do a great job. He makes sure that they do the job they say they're going to do, when they're going to do it. And if something goes wrong, because, hey, that's business, he's going to take care of it. So you can always depend on Office Pride. So please, 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 please call Office Pride for all your commercial cleaning needs. Well, I am very, very pleased to be here with today's guest, S.M. Wright. S.M., how are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on the Texas Titans podcast. If ever there were a Texas Titan in my book, it is you, my friend. So thank you so much. So, S.M., like before we came on, I have all your bio, the official bio of who you are and what the S.M. Wright Foundation is about. But today, I just want to sit down and visit with you and talk about your role as a leader and running not only such an important organization for the Metroplex, but also the rich history and legacy that you continue in this part of the state that your dad started. And so, first of all, tell me a little bit about your dad who, and for the listeners that don't know, S.M. Wright was a pivotal leader during the civil rights movement in the Metroplex. And if you notice, we didn't have a lot of the uprisings and the tension that many places across the country had during those times. Yeah. And if you speak to any civic leader in Dallas, Texas, they'll tell you that S.M. Wright played a huge part of that. So tell me a little bit about, and I'm not just talking about the S.M. Wright that everybody knew, but what was your dad like at home and whenever he was disciplining you, when he was instructing you, imparting wisdom to you? Give me some of that background, because I think it's going to be so important to paint the picture for the leader that you become today. So talk to me about your dad.
Yeah, my dad was just wonderful. He always knew how to have fun and also impartaking of wisdom. And he always... like going fishing and going on the lake to fish, and first time teaching me how to fish on the lake. And then while we was on the lake, and he always talked about his life story, and he always encouraged me and my brother that you can reach the stars and be successful. It was always a teach. Every time I was around my dad, it was always a teaching. He always teaching. Mm-hmm. He had always impartaking in wisdom, and he's very outgoing. We went everywhere. He said, "Oh, you got to go here. You got to go to Austin. We got to go to the Alamo. We got to go to Disneyland." I mean, we'd be traveling all over the country and seeing different sites and important sites in American history, and also to see the beautiful scenery of the country. And he was very going. Okay, I never forget, we'd get on our first airplane ride, and I was only 4 years old getting on an airplane. I mean, it was just a wonderful experience to be around a wonderful dad that want to make sure that we are exposed to see greatness and good things. And he was just so wonderful in making sure that me and my brother to see the world more and have a broader vision and a broader view of life. And so he was just very outgoing. I mean, he was very outgoing in making sure that we see the world.
Well, and so, so he was a pastor,
yes,
for your entire life, I
yes
guess, right? So that's the
oh
only
yes
thing you ever knew him
yes
as. Okay, so you got to see him firsthand, not only leading you
yes
and your brother and your family,
exactly,
but also the church. Now,
yes,
what was his leadership style
oh
as a pastor?
It's just been enormous to see my dad speak at over thousands of people. Mm-hmm. It was just mind-boggling at conventions and conferences and how he just really gets the crowd going.
Mm-hmm.
And that just captivated me every time he stand at the podium and just preach and minister to so many lives and seeing so many lives changed. Mm-hmm. It was just wonderful to see him in action,
right,
and to see him in full focus. And it's just how he captivates the crowd and so many people receive his words. It's just been truly amazing at the many different venues that I was able to go to and see him perform.
Right.
It's just been awesome to see that.
So tell me what it's like. So you have your dad,
sure,
who's literally on a stage.
Sure.
I mean, and he is touching, like you say,
yeah,
thousands
yes
of lives
that's
in
right
person, which multiplies even beyond after he gets through speaking.
That's right.
But then, at the end of the day, he comes home.
That's right.
And he's your father.
He is my dad.
And I think you and I are close to the same age.
Yeah.
I'm 44. How
same
are you?
Age.
Okay, so
same
44.
Age.
So he came up when your dad was born in what year?
But in 27.
27.
27.
That's what I thought.
During the Civil Rights Movement.
Yeah.
During those changes in our country, Jim Crow laws and all
yeah
that was going on at the time. And it was hard. He always talked about how difficult and how hard it was back in those days. And what he was telling me back in those days, that's why he wanted to make sure education.
Mm.
And he was very proponent in getting educated and
yeah
going to college and,
yeah,
and making sure that you excel in education, because he taught me and my brother education is going to be the key. And he
right
knew that even though the country was going through so much at that time,
right,
he knew that the education was very important. And that's what he talked about, and as he really drilled on, is making sure you have a good education.
Well, and besides the education aspect,
yeah,
and I can totally
sure
relate to that, because you know, I'm the first member of my family to graduate from
sure
college, and I've kind of been the same way with my daughters.
Sure.
It was from the day they were born, they always knew you're going to get an education, because
yeah
in my opinion, and I think you'll agree based
sure
on what your dad said,
sure,
probably what you've seen in your life,
yeah,
education equals freedom.
That's right.
It equals opportunity.
That's correct.
It opens your mind. It helps you understand not only the world around you, but the world at large a lot better. So I completely see where your dad was coming from on that.
Yes.
One of the things that I've always noticed about you, SM,
mm-hmm,
and this is what I want to talk about, because
mm-hmm
given, like you said,
yeah,
the era that your father came up in,
yeah,
and then I see his son, who's this leader, you always have this big smile on your face.
Yes.
I mean, you radiate every time I see you. How did your dad impart that as all the lessons that he's given you? Because he has seen some trying times
yes,
that I'll never experience.
Yes.
Most people today
yes
won't experience.
That's right.
But what would he do to tell you, as his son, always remain joyful? What was that lesson? What did that look like, and what did that sound like?
Yeah, because he always told me when challenges do come, and we all gonna have challenges, he always say that you have to keep your faith strong
mm
and have hope.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the end of the world when you hit a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to meet it and then tackle it.
Right.
And succeed.
Right.
And so that's what he always in told me and mentored to me about.
Mm-hmm.
And with the challenges, he always said you got to think it through. And said think those challenges through. How you're going to get through them, and then
right
and then once you get through them, how to celebrate when you finish your hurdle
right
and the
right
challenges that
right
you have overcome.
Right.
And it's a joy when you overcome a challenge and have joy.
Yeah.
And so with the smile on my face, I'm just, you know, I just thank God. There's so many angels that have come in to help us with the work that we do, and to see that we can put joy in so many other people's lives and hope in other people's lives when they seem like they're at a challenge and they're in their life, and then we come in to lend a helping hand so they can overcome that challenge,
right?
And to see a smile on my face and see everybody happy,
right.
I mean, we have done our job, and people can get back to self-sufficiency.
Absolutely.
It's good.
Now tell me about your mom.
Oh, my mom is just she is wonderful. She has always been I call it the anchor. She's the glue to keep everything running, to keep the motor running, to keep everything running. Mm-hmm. Even though she don't say much, but behind the scenes, she making sure everything's organized, making sure everything's on point, and making sure that everything's in detail, form, and fashion. Mm-hmm. And so she always bring that love and care, and making sure that things is going well.
Right.
And she is a huge encourager.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of people they take for granted, that especially when you have a dad as visible as yours, and knowing that there's, because it's just the two of you, right? The two boys.
Yes.
There's two sons there at the house that still need to be raised while he's out tending to a much larger flock.
The glue.
And that's a lot of work.
She was the glue. Yep. She was the glue to keep it all going, and I give that to her, the credit to her, that she's the one to keep everything going.
Well, now I got to ask you this, because as you hear a lot of stories of preacher's kids, you know, everybody thinks that they're little angels all the time. Mm-hmm. Did your dad ever have to come down on you pretty hard?
Oh, yeah. He disciplined us, you know, like in teenagers and growing up and all. But his discipline, he always tell us this is the way it needs to go and how things need to be. And, you know, our teenagers and children and all with friends and everything. So, yes, we got discipline, but that every parent does that. But, But now I understand. Now when you get older, now I understand. Oh, I understand why. Now I understand and I see.
Well, now tell me this. Whenever you were coming up, did you always know that you wanted to, in some way, follow in your father's footsteps? And did you think maybe you would become a pastor full-time?
Well,
or how did that come about?
I think it happened in my high school years at Lincoln. You know, in Lincoln, that's when at the high school, when the teachers all saying, okay, it's time to find out what you want to be in life. Because when you hit freshman in high school, that's the first thing the counselors, when you go and meet with your counselors in high school. And I know then, you know, I wanted to do something in life, and I'm just seeing my dad, just the way he operated and the way with the church and what he did in the city, it really took an effect on me and looking at him. And then also, but when we found out that he was sick and found out that he had cancer, well, my mom knew all along he had cancer. We didn't know until high school. Mm-hmm. We was in high school that he had cancer, and I said, oh my God. And I said, we got to think on life. I'm really thinking about life more now, because we didn't know how severe the cancer was, or we thought it was going to be in remission or what have you. But I knew then things started to change with my dad, with the cancer was taking form.
Right.
And so we and my brother, we just got serious about life in high school and to see what we wanted to be. And so I already knew. I said, you know what, my dad, he worked hard at it. And I said, well, and he built this wonderful ministry. And I said, well, you know what, I this is what I want to do. I just made up my mind in high school, you know what, this is what I want to do. And I talked to my dad about it. We had a good talk at breakfast. And I said, and we told dad, I said, this is what we want to do. And we want to know the protocol process to get it done. And when we told dad of that, he was just in tears crying.
Really?
And then forgot it and was crying. I said, this is what we want to do. I said, okay, but we're going to go through the process. And that's how that kind of worked out. And he was just very pleased and very happy about it. Because I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I was trying to get to be a lawyer. So, but I guess this is what he wanted me. This is what I wanted to do and wanted to continue it. And I made the choice. And so I think I'm glad I did.
Well, that's exciting. You know, I spoke to Jilly Allison, who is, you know, now president of B Magazine. Of course, you know, it's a family affair as well.
Oh, yeah, Wick Allison very well.
Okay, so, you know, and I asked her, I said, okay, whenever you came back and told mom and dad, you know, this is what you want to do, you want to follow in their footsteps in publishing, you know, how did they react? And she said they tried to keep up a good poker face, but she knew that they were very excited, very happy, because that's, you know, as parents, we want our children to find our own way. But it had to have been gratifying for your father, because, you know, it's just like any other
you know, legacy. Mm-hmm. He sees his sons wanting to take that off. That had to have been gratifying to him. So when that happened, mm-hmm. how did you prepare for what you were about to endeavor? Because as we know, yeah. like you deliberately went in with a purpose, yeah. wanting to follow in your father's footsteps yeah. and keep the ministry going.
Correct.
So many second generation or yeah. third generation, there's a failure. It's, generational success is something that's very rare.
Yeah.
So did your dad prepare you for the yeah. pressures that yeah. you would be facing?
Yes,
because
he did, yeah.
no matter what, and to this day, I'm sure, yeah. SM, you know, you're always judged by
yeah.
your father. It's, that, yeah. it's a big looming shadow, which that's one of the things I admire most about you
yeah.
is that you are your own person, and the things that you have done
yeah.
to help grow the foundation and yeah. everything beyond that has been remarkable. So did your dad talk to you about that, and how did you and your brother handle going, we're about to step into some
yeah.
very, very
yeah.
large shoes?
I had to learn a lot from my dad because the sickness was taking form. The cancer was getting very aggressive. So we was just sitting there like sponges trying to learn as much as we can. And he was teaching us how to minister, to teach us how to preside over church and how to formulate a message mm-hmm. and what have you, which he taught us all of that. Of how to formulate a message and how to reach the people, and he was just kind of giving us points how he of his experience, how he worked of his skills and his talent to where he is, and he was in part taking that in us, and we're taking it in, just taking all of the notes and the wisdom in, and so he really kind of did a crash course. We learned a lot, and like we went on fishing trips and some other trips, and we just sat down and we just making notes of everything of what he told us what we need to do and
right.
and how to do things. And then he also talked about the city and how Dallas is a great city, and you know, my dad knew this town
Absolutely.
Very great, and so he talked about Dallas too. So I learned a lot of things about Dallas and how that Dallas works.
Right.
And so it's just I've just learned a whole lot, and learning from him prepared me to where I am today.
Right.
And I'm still gleaming on his wisdom
yeah.
when he was alive. And now some things he said back then, now I get it now. It's
yeah.
like, now I get it now. Now mm-hmm. when you get older and you get that wisdom from him, what he said 25 years ago now, and it all coming full circle now.
Well, now tell me about this, because mm-hmm. You said something there that, like, most of the Texas Titans podcast uh-huh. listeners, they're entrepreneurs, they're business
sure.
leaders, they're like, you know, they're,
sure.
or they aspire to be a leader,
sure.
like what you have. You said something there, your dad was giving you instruction on how to communicate, because
yes.
as a pastor,
correct.
You've got to be able to touch the folks
That's
with,
right.
with the spoken word.
Correct.
Give some tips, you know, share some of the playbook.
He told me, he said, stay in messages. You got to stay with what's going on, what the families are struggling in,
mm-hmm.
and what the family household struggle in, or what the person is struggling, what their struggles are, and that's when you are in part take in the hope,
mm-hmm.
the encouragement, and find messages to uplift
mm-hmm.
and to give encouragement. Because he said when people come to church, or if they come to you or one on one, people need that type of encouragement and
yeah.
help. And he said it doesn't matter about the income bracket or income or how much money you make or whatever. It's the person. And
mm-hmm.
he always focused on the person
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't matter. But the person is low income, middle income, or on high income. Everybody has some type of trouble or challenge
right.
or hurt
right.
that's going on. That he always told us that they need the hope and be the encourager, and you be the person. I'd be the positive person to lift them out of their struggle and give them the hope that they need. And that's what he taught us
right.
that we need to do to help people
right.
in all forms of fashion
right.
and to be the encourager, because that's what helps us in the world today.
Now, have you found it, because as the leader of a ministry,
sure.
there's the preaching,
sure.
that's the big crowd,
sure.
but then there's also the pastoring, which
yeah.
is the one-on-one.
Yeah.
Did you find that you were better or more gifted at one or the other, and is there one that you enjoy more, and how have you balanced that?
I kind of keep it in balance.
Mm-hmm.
I do both. I try to be versatile, where you be effective on Sunday but also be personable with people and be really personable. I mean, that's the key with people and be with the people, understand the people, and have and be a people's person. And that's my thing. My dad always say, stay grounded and right. be with the people. So even though you can perform great and do well, but also be personable and keep you. And he always told us, keep your feet on the ground mm-hmm. and keep that personable approach to right. people. Yeah. And be with the people and have that personal approach. So I kind of keep a balance
right.
now, a balance and kind of versatile in that balance.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. So what year was it that you officially took over the ministry?
Daddy died in 94 of November.
Okay.
And so it was in 94. The transition was in 94, but after he passed, it's in 94.
Okay.
He died November 3rd, so I took over right after he passed.
So 94, and yeah. so you're pretty young at that time.
Yeah, I was 18.
18 years yeah. old.
I was 18 now, at the time, and Calvin was 17.
Wow. Wow, yeah. So here you are, two teenagers, literally, yeah. taking the helm yeah. Of the ministry of a yes. local icon. Yeah. I mean,
exactly right.
I mean, that's just that. There's no other way to say it. So, but you felt prepared?
Yep.
Okay.
I went in the day after we buried my father, and we went on that Sunday, and I just want to be prepared to do it. And, you know, you had a lot of critics. The critics saying, oh, it wasn't going to last 2 years, and mm-hmm. I had a lot of... negative energy mm-hmm. in the community, because they said at that time in 94, that's unheard of. I mean,
yeah.
no, I mean, that's in the state of Texas. That was unheard of to take over a major church, a major historical church in Dallas.
Right.
And that's unheard of. And so I had a lot of critics. I had a lot, but I just kind of ignored everything and just stayed focused on what needed to be done. And we've been successful at it.
And what did you do, SM? So there comes a time whenever, I mean, again, you're 18,
yeah.
you're having to, a lot of it I have to imagine was you're just reacting to,
yeah.
you know, I mean, things
yeah.
are coming and
oh,
you're
yeah.
just, y'all trying to figure out what to
do. It was going so fast because I couldn't really grieve because then now the business was on hand. So I had a lot of things just came rushing so fast.
And how did you deal with that? What did you do?
Just tackle it. I said, okay, you know, I'm grieving over dad's gone, but then now I got to get in here and work to do the work. And it just happened so fast that things was rushing. So I had to really just take my time and emotions and get myself together
mm-hmm.
so I can be prepared to do it. And so I did. I went in there and got in there and got prepared and stayed focused and have purpose and worked it.
And how'd you and your brother decide your roles? Because was it just age? Was it desires and ambitions?
Well, it was the way it works. Calvin was fine with being co-pastor, so it all worked out, and
okay.
so it worked well.
Okay.
Yeah, and we all agreed to it.
And did you, now, whenever you started as the leader of the
mm-hmm.
ministry, did you pull together a group of advisors that were there elders in the church that you tried to glean wisdom from?
Yeah, we had a lot of elderly. Yeah, in the church. Yes, yeah. we had a lot of elders and in the church. And so, yes, we had support in the church.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did it. And, you know, even though we had those that left because, you know, mm-hmm. oh, he's too
sure.
young. And so we had a falling away. And we had those that remained
mm-hmm.
and we just kept moving forward.
And so, when do you start? Because at that time,
mm-hmm.
were you doing as much outreach as the foundation is doing now? It seems like that's
mm-hmm.
really grown over there. That's under your leadership.
More, it was more in-reach at the time with the church.
That's what I
yeah,
thought.
It was more at the time, was after my dad died, it was more in-reach. But then we had the huge falling away that occurred about 3 years after my dad died. A lot of members left, so we had to kind of repurpose.
Right.
ourselves and refocus. I think 2,000 members left. I remember
wow.
about 2,500 members left in the 3-year span.
Wow.
After my dad's death, so the church was on a huge decline
mm-hmm.
At that time. So that's when we decided, well, I found we want to do a foundation. Okay, let's focus on the community, with the neighborhood, the community around the church. And I never forgot, we did a canvas. I went to 250 homes around the church in South Dallas and writing notes. I said, what you want in the foundation
mm-hmm.
and getting community input. Well, what you like in the foundation. At that time, it was a food center, a food pantry that we needed so bad, but there wasn't even enough food pantries in that area. It was just like one.
Mm-hmm.
And we the second one opened up in 1998.
Okay.
with the food pantry. And so we started with that, and North Texas Food Bank was a medium-sized food bank at that time. And Jan Pruitt just became CEO of North Texas Food Bank, and I met with Jan and with her team to get a license for South Dallas to do the food bank. And I never forgot that her team came down, we got all our certification, and we opened up and we started serving 100 families a day.
Wow.
At the food center. And it was wonderful. I worked it, getting the trucks to go to the food bank, get all the food, and then we process it, and then we register all the families, and we started with 100 a week until we decided to do just a big community day on Thursdays and just have everything on Thursdays and to provide all the food. So we do about, 4,000 families a month now.
Wow.
With the food center. And that's our flagship. And then every year what we did was we surveyed the community, what the community needed. And they needed a clothing center, so we opened up a clothing center. We need an education center for the kids so we can help with their homework help, because the parents could not help them at home. So we had the education center. We started that. And it's like year after year, there was more needs. And we went to 10 to 50 homes on Christmas morning and found out the kids were sleeping on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we instituted the Launch the Beds for Kids of North Texas to make sure every child get a new mattress. Because I didn't know all of over North Texas, these kids sleeping on the floor.
Yeah, so, I want you to talk a little bit about that, how that started, because I admit, now I have sat on the boards, I helped co-found a faith-based ministry in East Texas, and one of the things that the first time I ever heard about this issue that just never occurred to me was through your foundation at one of the events that you had held that I attended, to where we were doing a drive for the beds that, we always think of food, coats in the winter, school supplies. We never stop to think about what are these children sleeping on?
Right.
And you saw that.
Yeah,
and then
firsthand, every home in winter in South Dallas, every home. And I asked the parents, they said they can't afford the mattress. They could not afford them. And that's when we started it. And I was under the impression that the kids at home had beds to sleep in.
Right.
You know, and how are you going to have a normal home life and these children... they're sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's why they're not doing well in school, because they don't even have beds to sleep in at home. So I'm glad that we're able to do it. This year, we surpassed 10,000 sets.
Wow.
This year, we surpassed 10,000 sets since we started.
Wow.
And still counting. And I'm just so thankful that these children, and you come to our headquarters and see all the children write nice letters of getting these new mattresses, and it's just been amazing how we're able to change so many lives with these children and with families with the Beds for Kids. And then, of course, Christmas in the Park, we started at the church, and then that grew to the park, Opportunity Park, and we moved there to Fair Park.
Right.
And that was amazing. It was amazing to when we first moved there in 2007, 15,000 people showed up.
It's amazing. And I got to tell you, all the listeners, real quick, if you ever had the opportunity, if you want to see an amazing event, go to Christmas in the Park at Fair Park and watch what the S.M. Wright Foundation does. It will blow your mind. You will see happy families, happy children, happy volunteers. It's truly remarkable.
It is.
It's an incredible day.
It is a lot of fun. I mean, the holiday, it is a lot of work on the back end, but a lot of fun to see the kids to get what they want for Christmas and turn it into a big event and celebration and transform the automobile buildings, 100,000 square feet, and every inch is full.
Yeah.
We retrofitted to a big holiday pavilion, and it's just amazing, and now it's a huge tradition for everybody in town, and I'm just so glad that that is blessing so many lives during the holidays.
Now let me ask you this, and it's kind of ironic, divine, whatever you want to call it, but that's where the street's named after your father is, and that's happen? So was S.M. Wright Freeway named before or after y'all started?
It was before.
Yeah.
We did it in 95.
Okay, I thought it was
July of 1995 they did the dedication. We formed the foundation in 1998.
So how proud you must be to be at Fair Park with, I mean, yeah, you know, the free, that's the right freeway right there beside where y'all are doing all this good work. It's really, it shows what you've done with the legacy.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this from an execution standpoint, because you take me back to y'all, y'all have lost 2,000 members. Yep. It's kind of, and look, I mean, let's equate this to business.
If we lost money. It was near bankruptcy. We was near bankrupt. The church, we was near bankrupt.
And that's where you have to really exercise some leadership.
Yeah,
right?
We was near bankrupt. Well, the ministry was on a huge decline, and we was there financially. Was near bankrupt.
And what are you doing during that time? How are you processing it, and how are you keeping everybody's hopes up?
And I never forgot this. I went to John Stemmers. John Stemmers at the time. John Stemmers and my dad were dear friends. Okay. And I mean, I went to his office. He was at office at Stemmers Towers at the time. No, he moved. They moved the building that's in the Irving. They moved from Stemmers Towers. They just built a new building in Irving. And I just talked to John Stemmers, and I said, man, I don't know if I'm going to, I told him, I said, I don't know if I'm, we're going to make it. And John Stemmers told me one time, you're going to make it. Hmm. And he called me Junior. That's what his nickname called me, Junior. And you're going to make it. It's a surprise session. You're going to make it. Your dad did great things in this town, and you're going to make it. And that's when we was doing the idea, said, well, won't you just do a foundation? And we was just in office and said, let's do a foundation, and let's try to get some things going there to do the work in the community. And you know, I did research about the foundation. That's how it all came to be with the foundation. And I said, okay, Mr. Stemmers, I think I'm gonna look, research, and do it. And so, and that's really how the foundation. We were just sitting there talking, and then he went. And, you know, John Stemmers was a good friend of Trammell Crowe, and so John Stemmers got on the phone, talked to Trammell Crowe, and said, "Oh, we're going to work on doing the foundation." And then we got our good friend S.M. Wright and Charles Cullen, and that's how kind of that worked out, and they supported it, and to do the seed so we can grow with the food center, what have you, with the foundation. Because those are my dad's friends back in. They were friends back in the 60s when they first started their empire. They was at the very start of their empires when my dad met Trammell Crowe and John Stemmers and Mr. Cullen, the Cullen brothers at the time. And they were back that day, they was all starting their empires at the time when my dad was there. So they've been friends a long time. And so I thought that was so nice of them to give me the advice, because I just told them you couldn't. I was just thinking about some other things to do. I said, no, you need to focus on the foundation. That's you, and focus there and work there. And that's how it all started. And with my mom, and my mom made the call. She was in the meeting. My mother made the call and said, look, we have to do this. And you know, with my dad and my mom, she said that we got to do this. And they said, and John Stemmers said, let's do it. Wow. And that's how we kind of got the foundation going with my mom and John Stemmers and Charles Cullum and Trammell Crowe.
And let me tell you something. What that speaks volumes for what you've done. Because let me tell you something. Those men would not have done that if they didn't believe it was a worthwhile endeavor.
That's right.
And so what it says for the wisdom that we talked about earlier and the leadership that your father had taught you, and then your ability to take that and to have the credibility. One, if they didn't believe in you, they wouldn't have taken the call, or they would have humored you.
They would not.
But they were willing to help. And so that just speaks volumes. So tell me now, because of that also, SM, that shows that your integrity as a leader and the leader of an organization. Because let's face it, you've been under a microscope your entire life. That's part of the life of a preacher's kid, right?
That's right.
Especially one, you're just always in the public eye.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that frankly would love to see you mess up.
Yeah.
And they're watching for you too. So how have you, through your life and after your father's passing, you're now in charge of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done to always make sure that the integrity is there and to convey to, because another thing too, in a ministry, you have to do a lot of volunteers that they can come and go as they please.
Yeah.
What is kind of your philosophy on imparting integrity throughout the organization to make sure that it maintains that credibility?
Yeah, it's very important. It just really focus on the work and keep a good focus on the work and keep it organized and keep the business in order and keep it in order and stay it in order. And it takes a lot of work every day to do that.
Yeah. And I think that's what most people that they take for granted is that the fruit is reflective of the integrity.
That's
if the fruits are, like you say, keeping things in order, where people can look at it and go, I can look and see that they're doing the work, then that will get more support, more people involved. I think that's with any organization. If you want me to be an investor in your idea, let me see the fruit of your labor far. Is that right?
Exactly right. And production, we always have to produce the fruit. And if your fruit, your blessings and all, everybody can see it.
Absolutely. Now, whenever you get to a point where you're about to start a new initiative, now the Beds for Kids and Christmas in the Park, those have become massive undertakings.
Yep.
What is your process? Like if somebody brings up an idea either in the congregation or you and Calvin are talking, y'all decide, hey, this is what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
What does that look like? How do you test it? And then how do you implement the plan to go, okay, it's going to go from idea.
Because
for a ministry, it's almost like a product launch, right?
Yeah.
How does that look?
And we got to do like a slow start on it and see would it work. And like all of the programs that we did like a slow process.
Like a beta type.
Yeah, to see, okay, will this work?
Right.
And then we just work it over time to see if it's going to grow and grow. And it just takes time and with different programs and agencies that we do to see will it work within the community.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's successful, it grows and get more support. And that's what we've seen with each of our agencies. People see the mission, they see the purpose, and they get behind it and it grows. And that's how pretty much the process that have worked over the years.
Got it. So you just test it and see what the reaction
and see if
is.
It works.
And it's kind of like anything else. If the market says, yes, we need this, we're responding, then you create the infrastructure to actually make it grow to fruition.
That's correct.
Whenever leaders are in a position like yours, where not only are you having to do the organizational management, you're having to make sure that the light bill keeps, the lights stay on, the phones still ring, that outreach is still going on, but then you're also having to deal with the emotional aspect we talked about earlier, the pastoring.
Yeah.
So therefore, that can be draining.
Mm-hmm.
As a leader, how do you recreate? How do you make sure that you keep your batteries charged and your head sound and clear? What are you doing outside of the organization?
You have to take breaks. Mm-hmm. You have to take breaks, some meditation breaks, and just get away.
Yep.
And just take a breather and then get back in. It just takes a lot of breaks in between and recharge your batteries and meditate.
Right.
So you can go back at it again.
Now, do you meditate? Because that's something I've just recently discovered in the last couple of years is meditation.
Yeah.
Do you meditate?
Oh, yes, I do.
And what does your process look like?
You just get in a quiet space and just kind of and put some serene music on and clear so you can clear your mind.
Yeah.
And also at that time you can be getting new ideas and some new ideas to come in so some things can work out. But meditation is very good, so you can really reflect and then focus on what you have done, focus on what needs to be done, but then also have peace about it.
Absolutely.
And enjoy what you do.
Well, that's one of the things that, like, the whole meditative process, which for me was completely foreign. And of course, a lot of people, they hear it and they think it's some sort of, mystical, weird thing to do, but it's really not. Somebody once described it to me, and this is kind of what I've always thought about now whenever I sit to meditate just to try to clear my mind, is imagine a lake where there's waves crashing. It's choppy waters, and that's your mind. And then the meditation just kind of settles and calms the water.
Mm-hmm.
So then those thoughts and those ideas can come about. And one of the podcasts that I listen to a lot, which is the Tim Ferriss podcast, where he interviews leaders both in business and sport and everything. And like, he's always looking for the common denominator amongst high performers. And almost 70% of the people that he interviews, they do meditation of some form.
Yeah.
So that's what kind of got me to go, okay, I'm going to try this. And it's hard. It's hard to sit still for 10 minutes. It's more challenging than what people think. So, okay, well, very good. Well, now let me ask you this. What does, like, goal setting, because, that's got to be, you've got the foundation, which has a capital campaign,
you've
got the different initiatives that you're driving. So what does your goal setting process look like for you?
I do it every January.
Okay.
Every January, that's when the month you do reflection, and then that's when I kind of set out what we're going to do for the year, and then have bullet points, and then work on those bullet points for the year.
Yeah.
And because I always do it at the beginning of the year in January, and so okay, this is what we're going to be doing, and this is what have some highlights of the year, and then February on down execute it.
Right.
And then execute the plan. For the rest of the year.
And are you checking it along the way to see what milestones are hitting and that sort of thing?
Yep, and do it every January and see where we're at. And like every year, it kind of gives you your structure, mm-hmm. and you have a lot of structure, and you have joy when you reach those milestones, you reach those bullet points, and that's pretty good.
What kind of a leader would your employees say you are? What kind of boss is SM?
I think they will say I'm very caring boss. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure things is in order and deadlines met. Mm-hmm. And they enjoy it. Everybody really enjoy coming and they enjoy giving back.
Right.
Pretty much everybody's just been happy.
What leaders are you looking to now that as you've gotten, and take me back to, I mean, you had your dad, what an incredible role model you had from the beginning, but then as you grew and the responsibility grew, because again, the foundation has grown. That is something that you put in motion.
Yeah.
As you've grown as an adult, as a leader, you've grown in wisdom just by being on this earth for 44 years. What leaders have you looked to go, okay, I see something there that I can emulate. What, and is it through reading? Is it watching? Kind of take me through how you hone your skills.
With books, like I love John Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
I buy all his books. I just with the Successful Steps of Leadership.
Absolutely.
John Maxwell kind of hit it on the nail on a lot of things of his leadership books. So I am just crazy about John. I read all his books that has been encouraging me to keep what I'm doing and focus in leadership.
So that's a good one.
I really run to his books, The Seven Steps of Leadership, about growth. I read about the growth books. And so that really has kind of helped me in leadership by reading his books. And I haven't met him before, but I just love his books.
Yeah.
I mean, it has inspired me.
Yeah.
It has really uplifted me. And a lot of his books have been phenomenal for me in my crafting of leadership.
Right.
In reading his books. And he's been very encouraging in the books. And then also a lot of business friends that we all know, you like Doug Deason and Darwin Deason, sitting and talking with them, and Larry North, and so many successful, you know, like Ray Washburn and John, you know, John Witter, the friends of ours, and to see them where they are, and seeing, you know, Ray Washburn, what he's doing now, and I've been knowing him for a long time, and Cullen Clark, and I mean, just seeing like Darren Blanton, seeing the and they in business and so successful and but they're very personable as well.
Absolutely.
And to see their success and looking at that, it's just I've been looking at a lot of good leadership around.
Well, and see, and that's one of the things, SM, that's what this podcast is for, because I feel like I've had the great fortune, like you have, of meeting people like you. Mm-hmm. I've got all these people that have not only have they shown wisdom, had success, but they've been willing to pour into my life. And so that's what this podcast is to do, is to go tap into those amazing resources of human capital and knowledge and wisdom and lessons learned to be able to bring it to a group of people that may never be able to sit down with Ray or John or Doug.
Yeah, like Bunny Bennett from Ashford and what he's doing, Bunny Bennett's doing great, and Michael Watson with Carson Capital and with his firm. I mean, I'm just seeing all of those individuals, business titans, and seeing what they're doing, like with Monty with Ashford and what he's doing with Ashford Company. It's just amazing.
Well, and you said something there that I think a lot of people take for granted when you're talking about Mr. Stevens earlier, is you went to him with humility, and you went to someone who, like you mentioned, like literally a Texas titan, a titan of his industry, and said, I might be losing my ministry. I don't know what to do. And so talk to the listener about what it means to just have the courage to go to those. It doesn't matter. Like your dad taught you, it doesn't matter if they're a billionaire or if they don't have two pennies thrown together. Be willing to go talk to them. Talk a little bit about
that. It's more being personable and just tell the truth. I mean, just being honest and just tell the truth about the situation.
Right.
Like I went to Stemmons, I was at my wit's end, and I just told him ABC, and with his input, take the wisdom, and it worked. It helped, and the wisdom would last way longer. Because it's for your soul, and so it really helped. Yeah. And so just have to be honest and tell the truth and be. And just tell it straight and to the point.
You know, I think that's one of the things that it's taken me, you know, nearly 40 years to realize that, first of all, know who you are and then be comfortable with it and then let other people see who it is. And that's what you described is, because, I mean, those individuals that are in those positions, they have people coming to them all the time trying to put on a show.
Yeah.
To try to let them know. As a matter of fact, okay, another, this is funny. So Andy Stanley, who's Charles Stanley's another ministry family. Andy Stanley's talking one time about how when he was a kid, they would be in a social setting. And I guarantee you probably saw this growing up, where people would come up to Charles Stanley and start talking about themselves the whole time. Now, here you are. You might be getting a chance to have an audience with S.M. Wright or Charles Stanley. And instead of asking them, hey, how can I be more successful? They start wanting to try to say, I'm worthy of being in your presence. Yeah. They start trying to pump themselves up. When in fact, if you just be who you are, own who you are, I think those people, and I say this to the listener out there, because a lot of the young would-be entrepreneurs, or some of them that are even older, you know, exercise humility and don't, and these people can sniff out.
Oh, yeah.
They know who you really are and whether you're being straight with them. And it sounds to me like that's one of the successes you've had is you just came in honesty and transparency and you were rewarded for that.
Just being honest. Yeah.
Well, tell me now with where you are, what are the goals for the S.M. Wright Foundation? And I want you to have this opportunity to tell anybody anything they need to know, because my hope for the podcast, just like I've done with CASA of Texas, like I've done with what I want to do with some other organizations, like I told you before when we were offline, I want people to understand what the S.M. Wright Foundation is, the work you're doing, the goals you have for it, and how the listeners can be a part and help the good work you're doing.
Okay. The goals that we're working on now, what we're seeing now is about financial sustainability. Mm-hmm. I think for the first 20 years that we've been in existence, we've been focused on the physical needs for the family of food, clothing, education, beds, and furniture as well. But now we want to work on the financial aspect, and so the families can get a good understanding on the financial free enterprise system of our country, and they can get an understanding of it, and so that they can start small businesses and bring the financial sustainability in the home. And so that's pretty much going to be our next level in trying to encourage entrepreneurship and free enterprise. That is what's on our horizon, even though we'll still continue to provide the needs that we already have for our agencies, but the next frontier is economic freedom, financial freedom, and free enterprise is the main key. So we can try to teach the families of savings and starting portfolio plans and getting mutual funds and building up a portfolio so that they can live off their portfolio and they can pass it on to their families and children and grandchildren. So it's more about now trying to encourage families about financial education.
Right. So it's about life transformation instead of just the emergency immediate needs. It's about that life transformation. And I know it's cliche, but it's the old teaching the man to fish versus giving him a fish. That will be more sustainable,
That is correct. So that's where our goals are. We're really focusing on And as well as we want to, with the Best for Kids and Christmas in the Park, of course, we will keep that going. But on the horizon is the financial education, because it's a huge income inequality gap. I mean, it's here in Dallas and all over the country, and we got to try to close that gap, the income inequality gap, and really try to really teach at a young age about savings and about capital and building a business. So that's really what's on the horizon. And yes, we do need help. We need volunteers to come. We're getting ready for the holiday season, for Thanksgiving and for Christmas in the Park here in Dallas. So we do need more angels to come in and help volunteer and also give to us, so that we can make sure that these families have the hope that they need here in town.
Well, I think one of the great things that you said there, and you said it when we first opened this up, that whenever you were fishing with your dad, he used to tell you, you could reach the stars.
Yes, indeed.
I think the first, one of the first things that anybody that's listening to this podcast, that if you're struggling with a business idea, with financial literacy, you know, anything like that, the first thing is SM and Jason are telling you, you too can.
You can
do it. So you got to get your head around that first. It's not for a select few. You can. And the second thing that you mentioned early on, even if it's not formal education, even if it's not education that comes with a degree, the education that you're wanting to offer through the foundation of just understanding, you know, we only remain ignorant at our own peril, and we can cure that. And it's, so I would tell anybody out there, if you don't think you understand, you're not a financial expert or whatever, the tools and principles, they are available for anyone and everyone. And I think what SM wants to do with the families in this community that his foundation serves is remarkable. So please, you know, anything that you can do to help, to educate. And as it relates, again, I can't reiterate this enough. Christmas in the Park.
Yes.
You know, and there's so many people that come and swarm. Folks, you can be as busy or as just walk around as you want. Either way, you're going to leave Christmas in the Park feeling better than you did when you got there. You will be filled with the Christmas spirit, and you will have, I mean, you just getting to watch those children, you know, have a Christmas that they would not have had otherwise is truly special. So I encourage everybody to get out there. Well, one of the things I want to ask you that I ask all my guests, SM, before we wrap up is, you know, in Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, there's a chapter where he says, you're walking down the street and all of a sudden you see a church and you hear music. And you walk up to the church and you walk in and you realize there's a funeral taking place, and you walk to the front and look in the casket and you're at your own funeral. And then Covey directs the reader to shut the book and stop right then and there and ask yourself the question, what do you want said about you when this is all done? So I ask you, SM, with this great legacy that you have, and I'm not going to say inherited. You don't inherit a legacy. You take the baton and you run. You keep running with it, which is what you've done.
Correct.
So having done that, and you're just getting started. I mean, I like to think we're still pretty young. At 44, we're just getting warmed up. What do you want said whenever, before you hear "Well done, good and faithful servant"? What do you want said about you?
I wanted to make sure that I tried to help as many people as I could. Whoever come in contact with me, I wanted to make sure that I was the agent that God sent me here on earth to make sure that I help as many people here on earth as I could.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, you know, I think that is a very, very astute assessment of where you're going to end up, my friend. And
you
certainly helped me today. This visit, this podcast will only be as good as the guests that I have on here and I present to the audience. And my friend SM, I cannot tell you how grateful I am for you taking this time for me today.
Thank you so much, Jason.
Thank you, sir.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that visit with SM Wright as much as I did. I would, I have to ask if you would please go out to the smwrightfoundation.org. SM Wright, that's SMWRIGHT, foundation.org, and look at the work that they're doing, and please consider helping this incredible outreach group. They're doing incredible things in the inner cities and some of the most underserved and underprivileged areas of the Metroplex over in Dallas. And they need help. As you heard in the interview, SM talked about how it is truly their desire to be in the business of life transformation. It's about teaching a man to fish versus giving him a fish, with trying to put in place programs for financial education and literacy, as well as make sure these kiddos have beds, have a good Christmas, that families are fed, and that they are educated, and they're lifting themselves out of some cases dire circumstances. So the SM Wright Foundation is an incredible group to get behind, and I would just encourage you to go check them out and offer any help you can. And please do show up at Christmas in the Park. Go to the website, look for the dates, and show up and help. You if you have any trouble prior to the event getting in the Christmas spirit, well, trust me, show up to Christmas in the Park, and you will leave full of Yuletide spirit. It is an incredible day. It's an incredible time to see this, a lot of smiles on a lot of young people's faces, and to do a lot of good for some folks. So please consider the SM Wright Foundation. Check it out. And as always, thank you so much for listening to the Texas Titans podcast.